And we're going to start with Mike for One is Too Many. That's the topic of the meeting.
I'm an addict named Michael. And I felt like I was walking up to talk to the judge for a second. That's the first thing that popped into my mind. I don't like this. I'm very comfortable in an old basement, dungy-ass basement somewhere. Very comfortable down there. This is, never done this. It's definitely an honor to be asked to be able to share. To just try to be able to be myself and who I am. I just got a few things here I got to get used to, you know. I was thinking about the gratitude. You know, we were driving up here from the campground. We're camping for probably a couple weeks. You know, being clean and living a life that you people have told me to learn how to live, the benefits that you get from that are just, they're just unbelievable. You know, we can go camping for a week, 2 weeks, you know, whenever, you know, as long as we do what's right and plan it, you know, because we're responsible today. We have bills, we have things we got to take care of. I have a business. This is the first time that I actually let my guys work in. I'm getting paid right now to stand here. The more I think about that, that's pretty cool. You know? Talk about beyond your wildest dreams. And gratitude, just being grateful. I stay grateful every day. I mean, I've been first got introduced to Narcotics Anonymous in, I don't know, 93, I think. And I was at the end. I was at the end then, you know. Since then, I've relapsed twice, almost 5 years each time. And I'm going to tell you real quick why I stopped coming. You know, I became judgmental. I didn't get tired of the drama. I got tired of, you know, all the bullshit. I got tired of it, and I was doing good, and family, and life, and my life was 10 times better, as you know. If you stay clean for a little while, you know, your life gets better. You know, I didn't stay long enough to learn how to work through those kind of things. You know, hopefully, you know, I got another opportunity. I'm coming on 6 years again to learn how to stay, because I was beat up. I think about it, I was beat up in 93, you know. Our dog is at the camper, we have a puppy. The person I've become is not the person that I was when I got here. We were having fun on the way up here, but I couldn't stop thinking about my puppy because he's sick and he can't eat. He was throwing up this morning. And, you know, like he's in air condition and all that kind of stuff, but I care today as a person, you know, even about animals, you know, and like that's not funny, like I didn't know how to care before, you know. I'll tell you real quick, I'm pretty, you know, we were going to say some shit, I'm not going to say it, but we were driving up here, they were schooling me on what to say, okay? And you don't want to know what they told me to start the meeting out doing, okay? I can't do it, man. If I was in a basement somewhere, I'd do it, you know? I just can't do it right now. You know, just grab them things, hold on tight, and tell the truth, you know? Like we were talking about all kinds of stuff, you know? Because of being nervous, you know, learning how to laugh and have some fun on our way here. 2-hour drive to get back up here from the campground. Anyway, I grew up in New Jersey, in Atlantic City. I'll tell you real quick, anybody new in here, I want you to know I can identify. Gotta be that way anymore. I get overwhelmed on a daily basis when I talk about this. Because I know I should be dead. I know I should be dead. And you probably know the same thing. And you're sitting in here listening to, you know, a meeting, trying to get some juice and make your life better. It's not what you normally did on a Saturday night. You know, if you had money, you were rolling. If you didn't, you were panhandling. You did whatever it took, I'm sure. It's hard to earn this seat in here. Five brothers and sisters, grew up with six of us. My father was a heavy alcoholic. My mother worked three jobs. I was the oldest boy. Far back, some little memories I have, you know. I always had to change my little brother's diapers. I was 10 years older than him. I remember at that point on when I started learning about what resentments were, because I had to learn how to be an adult at 12 years old, and I had to be responsible for kids. But my mom, I loved my mom so much that I would do whatever to try to help her. If I ever needed money, I had to grab a lawnmower and go cut grass for $6 an hour. I used to hate that growing up. I learned in recovery that my mom taught me a lot. Because I work hard for everything. And I look back and I see, where did I get this shit from? And it's from watching my mother work three jobs and go to work. And she taught me as a kid that if I ever wanted anything, I had to work for it. So I, you know, through doing some... That's funny, I'm on my fourth step with my sponsor. But through another fourth step that I did, I got in touch with a lot of that stuff. You know, 12, 13 years old, father, heavy alcoholic, abusive, physically, would beat me. I would get in the middle of trying to stop him from my mom. And I was 12, I remember sitting in the bedroom crying. I was a kid, you know, scared to death. And I finally went out one night and started screaming at him, telling him to stop. You know, and then that's when I learned, you know, my ass kickings were coming next. And they become very comfortable to me. That's, you know, how people say, you know, I'm used to the physical stuff, you know. That don't, you know, that's why sometimes we, you know, in the streets for so long, the abuse that we put ourselves through, some of it's how we grew up, the pain that we learned how to take as a kid and didn't know it. Anyway, father didn't come back too much after that. By the time I was 15, I was out on my own, cutting grass, living in a motel. Just too much. It was too much. It was way too much. We have a 10-year-old, my wife does, and I'm a stepfather. I couldn't imagine putting him out on his own at 14, 15. I couldn't imagine it. This world would chew him up and spit him out. I don't know how I survived. You know? But I drank, I did drugs, cocaine. Back then it was the early 80s. You know, I hate to say they had good drugs back then, but they were for a little while. Quaaludes. I don't even think I remember much about the 80s except for three things. You know, the Rolling Stones concert, a little bit of it I remember, and not much other than that, you know. I was taking Quaaludes and they were putting me in a blackout and I was hooked on crystal meth and that kept me going. And I loved it. You know, I loved it. But what a sad way to live. And that's how, you know, by the time I was 18 years old, I got a job in the casino. That's when all the casinos opened up in the 80s back there. I got a job in the casino and I, you know, cocaine, pills, you know, all that, you know. I would put a suit on at night and then all night long I was a different person. I was another person. I would stay up for 3-4 days at a time. Just go bar to bar to bar, you know, the fighting, the booze, the, you know, everything. And first time I did heroin, a guy turned me onto it. I sniffed it and I fell in love with it. It put me where I had always thought I wanted to be. It just stopped. It stopped all them noises. You know, and even in recovery today, we still have the noise. You know, doesn't go away. You know, I'll get into that in a minute. But it stopped the noises for a while. So I did it. I loved it. I started going in and out of treatment centers after that. Never had a relationship with my father. My mother, I was always in and out with. Got clean, and my brothers, long story real short, one of my brothers found me. I was really bad on the streets in Atlantic City. I was living underneath the boardwalk, cardboard box. I was working in the Taj Mahal Casino, and back then they used to clean your clothes for you. So I could go in without a shower and put on clean clothes, and I thought I was okay. You know, I didn't shower much towards the end. I struggle with it today sometimes. It's not normal to me. My wife's always telling me, make sure you wash your whole body. You know, you want to know the truth? Or you want to know how great I am? What do you want to know? You want to know the truth, right? Today I struggle with it still sometimes. I take shampoo, you know, and I put some suds in my fucking hair and throw them around. I think I'm good, you know. It's an effort for me to have to do that. And you don't know that because you don't live with me. You don't see me. You see me outside. I look nice. I put clean clothes on when I show up. I don't do drugs. I live a good life. Okay? But what do you struggle with? That's what's going to keep you here. What do you struggle with? How honest are you willing to get about the things, the demons, you know, that you still fight, that you just push back down because you know you're okay again for a minute? You know, it's almost like using, you know, like, cop, that was okay for a minute. You know. So, my brothers found me, he brought me down to Baltimore with 3 bags of clothes. They said they wanted me to go away. They didn't want me there anymore. Oh. They didn't want me around anymore. I was afraid of, you know, just it was too much. It was too much. Maybe you can get clean, you know. Took me to Baltimore. I ended up in a place called Courage to Change. First time I surrendered back in the 90s. Learned that I could live a different life, got clean, stayed clean for a while, almost 4 or 5 years at that time, went through a lot of stuff, stayed in a halfway house, did what I had to do, you know, got married, knew nothing about marriage, nothing about love. That didn't last too long. I thought every guy, you know, are you taking the coordinates? I thought every guy cheated, you know, when they got married. You know, that's what you do. That was, you know, every guy goes out one more time and gets a little, you know, before you get married. You know, that's what I did. You know. And I came home one day and my wife at the time, you know, you talk about, and this is something you really got to think about, especially, you know, guys, you know, for real. So, I come home and she says, you know, she's in the hospital. Apparently something was wrong with her. She had, I don't know, some kind of, what do you call it, chlamydia or something. I don't know. How did this happen? And you think you're getting away with things, you know. There's no more getting away. Everything comes back to you, man. Are you tired of the fight? Are you tired of the pain? You know. So I had to say, yeah, you know what, I don't know. Cheated. Oh, and there went that, you know. I tell you what, the pain I put that woman through, first time in my life I ever started to think about somebody else, how I was affecting other people by my decisions in life, you know. And I haven't done it, you know, to this day. Again, anyway. So when we split up, you know, I didn't do a lot of work on myself at the time. When we split up, I chased somebody else, and then you know, I was fixing with another woman, and then she started using, you know, and then everybody told me, you know, you better get away, Mike, you're going to use. And I, you know, I'm not going to use. I've been clean 4 or 5 years. Don't tell me I'm going to use. I knew what to do. Go to meetings every night. Talk to my sponsor. This girl needs help. So I chased her for about a year. I chased her in and out of the strip clubs on Baltimore Street. Pulled her out of there. All kinds of stuff, you know. Finally, one day, I got tired of fighting it. And I walked into a house, and I'd never used in Baltimore, and I walked into a house on Washington and Gay Street. Anybody knows anything about Baltimore? I didn't know. You know, the neighborhood looked kind of rough. But I walked in there, and I before you know it, I sat down and said, give me one. I'm going to join you. So I started using with her, you know. And little by little, you know, I got to share this story. Little by little, I'm gonna get going there with that. But little by little, I started to notice, you know, we were using. I started to notice her stomach getting bigger. And so she was pregnant. And we couldn't stop using, you know. What's the name of the topic? One is, it's just too many. You can't, there's no stopping once you start. Once I started, there was no stopping. They care what the consequences, they weren't here. The consequences weren't here. Once I took that action, it was done. I just didn't go do a little bit in a car. And then, no. I sold everything I had. It was on. I couldn't stop. I wanted to, I couldn't. You know, and she's getting pregnant, and I'm watching her, and I'm trying to help her fix and all that, and her blood's all over the arms, and it was sickening. Sickening. I was hiding from the people in NA. I was scared. I didn't want to be judged. You know, they were right. They told me to stay away. So I hid more, you know. Eventually, I got locked up. And when I got locked up, she was smoking crack and all that stuff and shooting dope and all that on the same house. And she walked right down the street to the hospital there. What was it on Monument Street? Monument and something. John Hopkins places. And she walked through the door and my daughter fell out of her stomach. She was born 2 pounds, 4 ounces, addicted to cocaine and heroin. She had no lungs at the time, because the lungs are the last things to be developed on a child. She had 2 broken arms, 2 broken legs. I got out of jail. I went to see her in the hospital, and I held this little. And once again, you know, consequences. You just never know. Once you put that first one in you, but it works the same way with being clean. When they say beyond your wildest dreams, if you stay clean, your life is going to be, you don't know if you give it a chance. It's the same thing with using. It's just the opposite. I don't know what's going to happen. Well, that was a really tough point in my life. I couldn't stop using. The pain, I couldn't stop. Her sheet till this day, I don't think it's clean. Maybe a little bit here and there. My sister ended up getting my daughter. I ended up getting, when she was about 6, 7 months old, I couldn't take it anymore. I was going to shoot myself. I remember sitting underneath one of the bridges in Baltimore City, panhandling. You know, if I had a gun, I would have put it in my mouth. I just couldn't. I couldn't take it anymore because everything would come out. The heroin didn't work anymore. The childhood shit. I mean, everything would just. And then my own daughter. Look what I'm doing, you know. And so I surrendered, got clean again. And when I had about a year clean, I went to court, and I got full custody of my daughter. And I raised her, and I had 2 other daughters with her, and God, this is fucking treacherous. I don't talk about this a lot. So I had 2 other daughters with her, and then after 5 years, I relapsed again. My one daughter was 6, the other one was 7. And the two new ones we had. And it took me 8, 9, 10 years to come back. And I would go see them. I would catch the bus. And I would try. And I just couldn't. I couldn't stop. Every time I did, you know, it was more and more and more. And it's anyway, it took me 10 years till I finally got beat up enough to where, you know, last time I used, we were getting ready to cop, and up in Atlantic City, it's a little bit different. They sell it different. You know, I was getting ready to go to treatment. Long story, I'm going to skip all that, but I was getting ready to go to treatment, and I went and I scored. Because I was trying to score before I went to treatment. You know, I had to get one more. I just had to. Fucking crazy, man. You know, like, so I scored and I got 30, what do you call it, 30 bags. They're selling bags up there. So my brother said he'll be there in 15 minutes to pick me up. Make sure you got your stuff ready. So I put some stuff in my bags. Bales were breaking all over the place. I couldn't get the stuff in me fast enough. Did every one of them. Woke up in a blackout, some treatment center. About a week later, they rushed me to the hospital. Tried to put me on Suboxone. They didn't know how much drugs I had in my body. They pumped me full of Suboxone. That almost killed me. Sent me to the hospital. I woke up in the hospital. They had me filled with Valium. I was all cringed up. My nervous system broken down. My brothers came again. That day, sitting in the hospital, I thought, if I come back, I couldn't use it anymore. And I've been clean since that day. Almost 6 years. It's been a tough year. My life is good, but it's been a tough year. This COVID thing had me on lock. I've tried so hard to follow the principles of this program because I don't want to ever use it again. So hard, man. I work hard every day. I take care of my family. My daughters, the one that I left when it was 7 and 8, by the time I came home, they were 18. They didn't want nothing to do with me. It's been almost 6 years. I can't let that stop my life, and neither can you. Whatever your thing is. People used to tell me 1 year, 2 years, keep doing the right thing, Mike. Keep doing the right thing. They're going to come around. It's been almost 6 years. You know, them kids might stay angry at me for 25 years. You don't get everything back. Some things you don't. You think you're going to shoot dope your whole life, create a mess, and then come up and say, okay, I'm good now. Give me a... No, don't work like that. You got to learn to live with it. And if it does happen, and when it does happen, hopefully we don't make the same mistakes again. Right? So I live my life today to the best that I can. I rebuild another business from scratch at 50 years old. I worked for another guy carrying his tools, buckets of tools. He was a heating and air conditioning guy. He gave me $100 a day. And I've been clean ever since. And I started and I got away and I did what I had to do and I built my own business again. In the process of buying a home, just put a big swimming pool in my backyard, and rehabbing my house, bought a nice camper, I go places, I do things, I live my life. I live my life to the best of my ability. I have a loving woman at home. I have crazier than a, I don't know what. That shit crazy ain't even a word for this one. But you know what? We get along. We get along great. We get along really good. Do we have struggles? Yes, we have struggles. Yes. Three things. We don't cheat, we don't hit, and we watch the language with each other when we get mad. You know. So, today's, it's just really good. Live a good life. I wish my kids were in my life, the two. You know, maybe I have hope that, because I'm a good person, I know I am. You know. So this year has been really hard with the COVID. I have been to many meetings. I've been scared. When they told me to, you know, they're pulling people out in body bags all over the place and people are dying from this thing, you better isolate and stay home and do what you got to do and be careful. And for the first time in my life, I started listening to society, to the rules of society. And it put me in a spot where, you know, it's been very tough. You know, and I've lost some friends because I've had some friends say, you know, fuck that and all this shit. And like, I'm not all for that anymore. You know, I'm going to follow the rules to the best that I can, whether I agree with them or not. Am I better than anybody else? No. But if you know my story now, like you do a little bit, maybe you understand why. If you get a chance to know somebody, what's behind their reasoning. But scared? Yeah, I was scared. I didn't want to die. Hey, what are you scared for? No, shut the fuck up. Get out of my lane. I lost some friends in the past year, so I'm restarting over again with that. But what are my choices? What are my choices? Try it again by myself? Come on. No. This works. You know, stick with it. It works. You know. I'm happy to be here. I'm happy to be asked to share. I'm happy if I could help somebody with my message. It sure helps me when I see you guys and I can get a hug. I'll tell you that. That's one of the most important things I get from anybody, whether I know you or not. Is getting a hug and just a little love. Whether I got 5, 10, 20, no, don't matter. Don't matter. I'm a grateful addict named Mike. Thank you.
Our next speaker is someone who I just adore and I keep her very close to me. I know she's super nervous, but Jamie G.
My name is Jamie, I'm an addict.
Oh my God, I just, I am so grateful to be here. I am so nervous. And the main reason I get nervous, because I'm an emotional being. I ain't got that y'all mean up in me, so I don't have nothing to sedate my feelings. And it doesn't feel good to talk about me. But I know that God's purpose is for me to share my experience, strength, and hope of how did I get clean one day at a time, you know. And that's why I try to fight through the fear. And somebody shared earlier in the meeting, like, no matter what, they don't let fear stop them. They like it, like, you know, it's like a pet peeve of theirs. And so I try to fight through it, but my heart starts beating so super fast and I start shaking, and it just don't feel good. But anyway, I grew up in Southwest Baltimore. A lot of people here support me. Thank you. I love you guys. It's my story. So it doesn't matter where you're from, you know, who your connections are, you know, what's your problem and how we can help. And that's where I identified with Narcotics Anonymous. Because when I came in, you know, it was so foreign to me because the neighborhood and environment that I grew up in, like, we didn't show feelings. We didn't say, I love you. Like, I grew up in a big-ass family. You know what I mean? I grew up in a third-floor story row home. We were on top of each other. They still live in the same house. My family still lives on Ramsey Street. Nothing has changed. And, you know, so everything, like, it was just normal to, like, not talk about feelings, not have the dinner at the dinner table. You know, when I was younger, my mother was a paranoid schizophrenic, antidepressant. My father died when I was 4. Thank God for my aunt. She took all 5 of us kids in on top of raising her 4 kids. And everybody in my family got high on something. Any mind mood altering chemical, they got high on. My mother died at the age of 50 from the most horrifying drug out there. Alcohol is a fucking drug. And it's the worst of them all because it's on every corner and it's acceptable. You know, and it's killing us slowly. You know, and they killed my mother at 50. So, you know, back in the day, I guess, you know, before I even started using, I didn't want to be a part of that family. I was embarrassed of my mother. Back then, I didn't understand the disease of addiction. I didn't understand mental illness. I didn't understand anything. You know, all I know is I didn't want to be inside the skin I was in, and I wanted to be in a different family. And, you know, it was just embarrassing to me. So I think I hid it from... So before I started using, I'm so nervous. I do little things like spin around real fast, get dizzy, like the way it made me feel. Smoke cigarettes back to back where I threw up, and I liked the way that made me feel. And now that I was doing step work and in Narcotics Anonymous, I know why I did them things. Because I was trying to hide the way I was feeling about, you know, not being able to feel loved or abandoned. You know, because I didn't understand why my mother, you know, went off to here and went off to there and had this addiction. I didn't understand when my sisters got older, they rolled out and started living with their boyfriends. So anyway, you know, I was left with my aunt who ended up trying to help my mother out. And back in the day, you know, growing up, before I even put the drug in me, my mother was bad, man. You know, on top of mental illness, disease of addiction tore her new ass. You know, and when I was younger, she used to come on the corner. And that's why I don't like sharing, because it's so real. It's so, it brings up all them devastating moments of me not being able to help my mother. Because it's just terrible. That's a tragedy that she went through. Somebody like me is sitting here sharing. You know, she never had that opportunity. It just devastates my heart. But anyway, before I even put the drug in, my mom would come up to the corner, and she always had a 40 in her hand. And she would come out, and here comes my mom, so I'm embarrassed. All the guys are on the corner. I'm trying to be hips licking down. Here comes Teresa with the 40. A big piss stain on her. And they're all laughing. Teresa, come here. Come here, Teresa. And they're throwing quarters at her. You know, what, 75 cents back then, a quarter beer. And get her to sing songs, and I would laugh. You know what I mean? And that was just to feel a part of. Just because I didn't want nobody to think that I'm going to be like her. I'm paranoid. I'm getting ready to be crazy like my mother. So I was just trying to hide. So I ended up using, growing up in that household, everybody got high before hard drugs really came into play. I remember my mother trying to get, you know, herself together at one point in time. I moved in with her when I was 11. I can remember all of her friends passing out, and they used to have a blue Pabst ribbon beer back in the day. I don't know, I was 11. I'm 43 now, it was a lot of years ago. And I can remember my first time drinking was by myself. I went down there and just guzzled it, like the way I felt. And I chased that feeling ever since. And then it went on to marijuana. That wasn't enough. And now I can remember finding heroin. That was all she wrote. Like, I didn't care if my mother came on that corner anymore. Like, that shit didn't bother me. I had that thing in me. I did not care. You know, so I tried to fix the way I felt for so long. And I chased it and chased it and chased it. And, you know, I started doing shit that I never thought I did. I ended up at my first treatment center when I was 14 years old. You know, sniffing dope. You know, I had not a clue. When you're 14 years old, what are you, in high school? I don't know. I mean, the disease of addiction robbed me of that. Like, I went to 8th grade. I graduated 8th grade. I don't know how. I walked into South Freshman High School and walked into one class and walked out. Never even seen 9th grade. I don't even know what high school looks like. I never seen Howardsville. You know what I mean? Because the streets and the disease of addiction was way more important to me. Getting high and chasing that feeling of not feeling... not feeling true to myself and wanting to be in the family I was in, I chased that feeling of the first time I got high, and nothing mattered. You know what I mean? Nothing mattered. Nothing mattered. And I continued to use hard, you know, 14 years old, jumping in and out of cars, places I don't belong in, you know, and I ended up getting clean my very first time. I found Narcotics Anonymous, man. And how I did it was, I didn't do it, God did it. I ended up getting pregnant when I was 18, had my daughter when I was 19. I was off the chain, and the vicious cycle got worse. But anyway, I was only sniffing, drinking, smoking PCP. Had my daughter, and then the pain of going through not having a mother and watching my mother suffer the way she did. When I had my daughter, I said, that's not going to be me. When I get out of this hospital, I'm going to be a mother. You know what I mean? And I thought that. But I went on Ramsey Street 2 minutes, and I handed that baby girl over and said, I'll be back. And that never came back. It might have been 8-10 hours later. The disease of addiction didn't care how much I wanted to be a fucking mother. It didn't care about that motherly instinct. All it kept saying is, one more, get one more, get one more. I didn't know what I suffered from back then. You know what I mean? That was 20-some years ago. I had not a fucking clue. I'm so blessed to find Narcotics Anonymous. My mother was just unfortunate. So anyway, I was going up the hill one day copping, and I just was like, God, I can't do this no more. You know what I mean? She was 9 months old by this time. I done used her for 9 months. And did things that I said I would never do. Sticking bottles in her mouth underneath the bed that was there 6 days because I just needed to shut up because I'm sick. Just shut up. So anyway, going up the hill, I had a sister who I held her neck when I was like 9 years old so she can shoot in her fucking vein. She ended up getting clean, man. She moved away in St. Mary's County. And thank God for it, because she was my first shot of hope. I said, if she can do it, I can do it. I was 19 years old. I said, you need to come get me, because I can't do it here in the neighborhood. I can't do it. I seen that she did it. Come get me. She takes me up St. Mary's County, and I'll go to my first Narcotics Anonymous meeting. I'm from Baltimore. Mind you, I can do like this at Inner Harbor. You know what I mean? That's the streets I came from. And never even went down to Inner Harbor. You know what I mean? Like, never even really visited. You know what I mean? Everybody's like, oh, you're coming out of state. Let's go to the harbor. I've never even been there, and I live there. And anyway, I go up St. Mary's County, my first introduction to Narcotics Anonymous. I didn't hear anything the speaker said. All I focused on this one guy and how he shared about he's devastated, he has his boat, and his motor went up, and he just don't know what to do. And I'm devastated he's sharing that shit, because I don't have a fucking boat. I've never even been on a boat. Mind you, I'm closed-minded, though, guys. Anything is shared material now. I don't give a fuck what it is. I was just so uneducated, and I'm telling you, I judge a fuck. I said, oh, no, I tapped my scissors to take me back to Baltimore. She's like, ah, you'll use. Then I had another little glimpse of hope and messages of hope. If, coming from the environment I came from, like, we grew up in the neighborhood, but we all knew each other. And then there was other dope fiends I thought I would never be like. Them dope fiends, before I went to St. Mary's County, would ride past. Jane, you ain't got to live that way. It's a better way. Meeting up on Christian Street, come on. I'm like, man, what the hell are they talking about? Don't give up 5 minutes before the miracle happens. And I was like, is that so-and-so? And that's so-and-so? And these are guys I thought, these are hardcore dope fiends. Shot dope in her neck, did a hard time, everything. And they were smelling good, looking good, had cars, smiling, and it wasn't fake. And when I was in that meeting, I told my sister, take me to Baltimore. And my journey began, man. I walked up to Christian Street, and I ended up with almost 10 years clean. Got a sponsor, got a home group, got very involved. Did shit that I've never done on Ramsey Street. There's people still stuck on Ramsey Street that never even been to Ocean City. We ended up going to Jersey for conventions, New York, went to Massachusetts bus trips, just super involved. I had a home group for 7 years, when I first introduced myself, everybody introduced me to Narcotics Anonymous. They was hugging, it was genuine, and it was crazy to me. I didn't want to hug people, but something was happening in these meetings. Just like something's still happening in these meetings. Even though I didn't stay clean, like there's something that's so magical and so powerful, it's unreal. And it's like a drug, it's just one or too many, and 1,000 never enough. That's how it is with NA. Like, fucking NA is the shit. You know what I mean? Like, Narcotics Anonymous saved my life when I was 19. And I got everything that, I've never had a driver's license, never had a car. Ended up with a job that I've had for like 16 years. Got married in this process, had a kid in this process. And somewhere along the line, I had like 9 years and 6 months. But it happened way before then, where my disease started to shut me down. Like, this motherfucker's phony here. Look at her. She coming all up in your face. Look at this one. Look at that one. This one needed my,
you know, I'm focused on you, but I just forgot about me and why the fuck I'm here, you know. And then I started feeling like Mike was saying, I wasn't getting honest with myself. I was feeling depressed. I was feeling lonely. I was feeling anxious. I was feeling insecure. I felt like killing myself in 9 months clean because I had let the disease back me up in a corner because I stopped reading the literature, I stopped coming to meetings, and I stopped being honest. And emotionally, I just couldn't handle it no more. Where I checked out, man. And it backed me up in the corner, and I used, man. All that shit I accomplished, we ain't have nothing, my husband and I. We both came from the same streets. And everything went, man. One is too many, a thousand never enough. You know what I mean? I tell you, everything that we had, because, you know, I thought maybe I can just do one more. No. At the end, my husband and I, we did so many things, it was ridiculous. We ended up having our business. We ended up having money in the bank. Everything else came more important than Narcotics Anonymous, you know, and all that shit went. It went in a matter of 6 months, you know, and disease of addiction doesn't care if you're married and you love your husband and you'll never step out of that relationship. But disease of addiction don't care. You're going to get one more and you're going to do whatever's necessary to get it. And that daughter that I ended up helping get clean, she was 16 years old. I'm walking up down the boulevard tricking. You know, and somebody pulls me up and was like, you should be ashamed of yourself. Your daughter's got to go all the way around this way so she don't see her mother tricking. That's because I thought I could get one more. I can't do one more. That one more had me fucking selling the fucking copper out. We was fucking putting holes in the fucking house that we paid on for 11 years. We paid on a bitch faithfully every month. Gone. You know, we sold the furnace for $80. I ain't never had air conditioner or essential air. In my life, we was living good. I thought we were living good. And we sold that bitch for $80, man. It don't matter, man. It don't matter. You know, I didn't never want to degrade myself out there doing what I had to do this last time. Like, a picture came up on my Facebook. I'm telling you, we're so fortunate to be here. I know I am. I don't know about y'all. But it came up on my memories, and in 2014, my husband, you know, ended up shooting dope in his neck and got an abscess. Well, it was so bad that it went all the way down to his back of his neck, and he's screaming in bloody pain, like, for days, and I'm just smoking that pipe, because let me tell you, it's the most treacherous drug besides alcohol, crack cocaine, because I would have killed somebody. I sold my soul, I sold my kids, I sold my life, man. Any drug, no drug is better than the next, but I'm just telling you. I don't know how I'm sitting here. And anyway, friends came over to get something. They had to call the ambulance. He goes in the ambulance. I go with him, finally take my crack with me. We're down there, and he's got to go. They're saying that he might die if he doesn't get the surgery. So I'm calling people. They take him in for surgery, six-hour surgery. Mind you, we have been using. We built a network in Narcotics Anonymous. Let me tell you, Narcotics Anonymous was in that fucking hospital room. Down there waiting with me while I'm in and out the bathroom smoking crack, you know what I mean? But it was, my husband was going to die, you know? He came out, he had tubes in his mouth, right? He couldn't even talk, right? When he went in, this is how powerful the disease of addiction is, active addiction. We had copped like three dimes of crack. We go in there, he's in a 6-hour surgery, he ain't even wake up to the next day. We're in there, everybody, we can't believe we made it out alive, right? He starts to talk, right? And we're telling him, calm down, major surgery, I'm telling you, it took a long time to recover. He tells my sister, bring a pen over. He gets a pen and starts writing. He said, tell her, come here. He said, where's the crack at? That's powerful. That's fucking powerful. Priscilla, everybody there who is not here because of disease of addiction also, that's fucking powerful. You waking up after something just killed you and you're asking me where the crack's at? I wrote on the paper, that shit's gone. That shit was gone 30 seconds into the fucking surgery. He knew it. People were there and seen that, man. That's real life shit. A lot of people in this room seen my husband come out of that shit alive. You know, and, you know, all we could think about was Narcotics Anonymous. Because we knew how long we lived good in here. You know what I mean? Practicing his principles, having a sponsor, working the steps, helping somebody. Like, this was it. And, you know, after we lost everything, he recovered, and we were out there hard. I just was like, God, I'm done. You know, and God blessed me somehow or another. And I woke up one morning, I said, I'm done, Michael. I said, I'm going to check in. He was like, yeah, all right, whatever. I said, no, you can go over to the house in Brooklyn, and I'm going to go in, and if you're not claiming I get home, then we'll just take it from there. But I was done, man. I knew I had a place to come if I could just find a willingness. You know, and God blessed me again, man, again. And I just celebrated 6 years clean because I know without the power of people, Narcotics Anonymous, my sponsor, a network, a fellowship, a God of my understanding and my willingness, man. Like, Narcotics Anonymous is like my life. You know, that daughter who I got clean for the first time, she's 24 years old. God knew I had great purpose. You know, I'm not saying that out of ego. Like, I didn't know I was going to get clean 6 years ago. I wanted to, and I knew how good Narcotics Anonymous was to me. You know, but when I was down on them tracks, I shared this all the time because it's the truth, and this big motherfucker 20 times bigger than me, and I didn't think I was going to come out them dark tracks alive. Some inside me was like, no, just get up and start moving, and I know what it is now in hindsight. That 24-year-old daughter that didn't want anything to do with me, I watched my grandson come into this world 4 years ago. That's a fucking miracle. That's a blessing. That's what fills my spirit. You know what I mean? My daughter ended up graduating nursing school. She's a nurse, 24. Only one in the family with a degree. Here, only one. We're from the hood, though. But I'm just saying, it's really a big deal. And I'm not saying to boost, but we broke the cycle. Narcotics Anonymous helped me do that. Let me tell you something. When I was growing up, we didn't have no dinner talks. I didn't have nobody say, Jane, let me help you with your homework. Look, it was hard for me. It's still hard. The whole pandemic, I was in school. I think I'm finally out the eighth grade. You know what I mean? But I'm all right with it. I'm still going to keep pushing. And because the disease just robbed me of so much, you know, that I wish I would have... You know, but anyway, she, from Narcotics Anonymous, showed me how to be a mother, showed me how to be a friend, and showed me how to consider my daughter's feelings. I was clean the first, 10 years of her life, relapsed that 10 years, was out there a while, ended up having 5 years, relapsed again. So I was clean most of her, 16 years old is when she found needles and crap pipes. She wanted to divorce me and everything. And, you know, she has done something with her life. You know what I mean? And I believe that's all through Narcotics Anonymous. It has nothing to do with me and my family because we're still crazy. They still have the same information of raising kids and they're all right with it. I have a family member down there now who smokes weed in front of them because they still think weed's a plant and all this bullshit. But whatever. And but that was my gateway drug, alcohol, weed. And, you know, it's not okay. So I feel like Narcotics Anonymous helped me break the cycle. You know, God blessed us with two grandsons. Like, you know, that's what I do to fill my spirit today. You know, nothing, no drug can touch that. No drug can touch being a grandma. No drug can touch being a standing member of Narcotics Anonymous. No drug can touch being a good friend. No drug can touch being true to yourself. No drug can touch the energy that Narcotics Anonymous has. If y'all don't feel it, I feel sorry for you, man. I'm telling you, this is where it's at. Like, Narcotics Anonymous saved my life, and it still continues to save my life. I can still continue to work with my sponsor. I call my sponsor probably twice a week. I have a network. I have a fellowship. The disease will beat me up, you know, but I just keep pushing. Because I know, like, the pandemic, isn't this great to fucking be here? I'm so happy to be here. I couldn't wait to be here. You know, because it was shut down. We didn't have conventions. We didn't have the energy. And then it's like, wow, I'm going to a convention, man. It's like, it was so good, the energy. I needed it. And, being in Narcotics Anonymous, I've had to, switch home groups, had to get outside my comfort zone because, you know, I'm in that box and Lydia talked about it. And finally, I started reaching out to different women. I didn't for years because, I come from the streets and I rang in that street mentality. Like, if you ain't like me, you don't talk like me, and you ain't this and that, whatever, the disease have. I had to take my brain out, rewash it because I was fucked up. And maybe that's why I didn't stay clean for all them years. So this time around, I got a sponsor, I got a home group, I got a network, and I started reaching out to different women I would never reach out to because my fucking life depends on it right here, right now. I don't care how much time I have clean, the disease never fucking sleeps. It never sleeps. It wants my life. We lost so many people in Narcotics Anonymous.
just this year alone of the pandemic, not just from COVID's devastating, we lost some good standing members of Narcotics Anonymous in the Baltimore area, man. Some good people. But we also lost, as soon as it started, we lost good people from the disease of addiction, man. They just couldn't handle the pandemic. I don't know what happened, but I celebrate my fifth year, and we closed down, they closed everything down, and my home group had the Zoom up 2 weeks later. And I didn't book, because I knew my life depended on it. Yeah, I didn't like looking at my fucking fat chin, you know what I mean? Always fixing my hair, you know what I mean? Covering up my body. And I was like, fuck it. I got there early, I stayed late, and I, Diane, you know what I'm saying? That's what we did. And we was there every fucking week because my life still depended on it. Just because of the pandemic, they ain't stopped selling dope. They ain't stopped shooting dope. None of that jumped off down that way. You know, they were still out there. They was not quarantining. I'm going to tell you that now. And it was still out there. So thank God for Zoom. You know what I mean? I missed the energy, but Zoom saved my life too. You know, any resource that I need to do to touch my soul or save my life, I'm willing to do it. You know, so even though, like, this thing right here is, like, this thing up here is serious, you know, it just is, because the disease will beat you up, you know, and God has always had purpose, and I just believe, like, Narcotics Anonymous, man, I'm telling you, I, like, live and breathe. I'm not, like, a literature thumper or anything, but I'm about Narcotics Anonymous, and let me tell you a thing that just happened recently where disease would creep up on me. I had to switch home groups because I got a new job. And you get comfortable. I had the first time I switched home groups is because of the negative energy that I didn't approve in my life anymore. Not talking bad about anybody, but there were certain things jumping off that just didn't fit my energy. And I ain't all that, but I'm just saying, I have a choice of what I feed my soul. So I switched home groups, and it was hard and it was awkward. And I go in this new home group up the Catonsville area. I'm from Southwest Baltimore. You know what I mean? You might not be too familiar with it, but you know what I mean? They got grass and they use lawnmowers and shit. And, you know what I mean? We ain't owned a lawnmower. You know what I mean? We had concrete growing up. My family still lives on that same concrete street. But anyway, I'm not saying that because, you know. But anyway, I get out here and I knew one person. And that was 3 years ago. I had 3 years clean. And Aziz was like, man, don't. You know, you're feeling awkward, and this one don't like you, that one don't like you, and it was so uncomfortable. And I had to get out of my comfort zone, because I know, like, I don't have another run in me. God's not going to bless me all these times to just think I can use and come back. No, I know better. You know what I mean? So I'm trying to fight whatever the fuck keeps making me use. And even that little scenario of fight through your feelings and going up to people I didn't know, like, you know, being a newcomer again. Are you guys going out to eat? And this one's got this to do. That one's got that to do. And they say, yeah, they're shunning you. They, you know what I mean? Don't do it. Go up the next week. And finally, I just kept going up and I kept getting uncomfortable. And I built a wonderful network out of that home group. Then I had to switch home groups. And then I just joined this other home group like 2 weeks ago. You know, and powerful home group, you know, like women with clean time, been around a long time, a lot of information, very intimidating, you know, book thumpers, literature thumpers, but I need that, you know what I mean, because I have my experience, strength, and hope, but I need to know, I need to understand what to treat, you know what I mean, because, yeah, it's my experience, strength, and hope, but somewhere along the line, I need to learn as much as I can about the disease of addiction. And these women are going to help me. So I did it the first week. They're like, you're going out to eat. I was like, oh, I got to clean this. I got to clean that. And then a lady celebrating. They're like, we're going out to eat. And I did it. And it was very uncomfortable, you know, because you're getting around a new crowd of people in NA. Even though they've been around a long time, but I'm letting more people in. And I'm expanding my horizons. And I'm reaching out because I still want to save my life. You know, my life is so important because I have, like, grandkids who depend on me. I have a daughter. I have a son who depends on me. God depends on me because I believe everybody in this room is a vessel. We are a vessel in one shape, way, form, or another.
that we're doing His work no matter what it is. If it's just being at your home group and somebody says, "Man, Jamie, at her home group." If it's somebody up here and they're sharing, and because let me tell you, it caught my attention. When I first got clean in 97 the first time, I love coming to meetings, man, because you got people up here going to share for the newcomer, man. They capture your attention. You're like, whoa. You know what I mean? Like, you have them people who touch people. You have so many different ways. Saying kind words to people. Because there's not a lot of kind people sometimes. You know what I mean? Like, we can come in here and share all that good share shit all you want. But when you go over here, you want to shun this one, or you want that fucking cunt. You know what I mean? You want to say shit like that. I don't want to be that type of person. You know, when you leave my presence, I want you to say, you know what I mean? Like, I feel good about that. I don't want somebody to walk away from me feeling less than, better than. Whatever you feel, I don't know. So my little thing is just like child practice, kindness, love, definitely compassion. I believe that's why I get so emotional, because I'm hard on myself, you know what I mean? And I just try to live one day at a time, no matter what, man, I'm telling you. Like, this thing is powerful. I just can't even believe that I'm here. So I'm really running out of things to say. I'm probably nowhere near done. But I have a home group, I have a commitment, I have a sponsor, I have a network, and I'm in this fight just for today, for saving my life. Thanks for letting me share.
I'd like to thank Mike and Jamie both for a great meeting. I'll close with serenity prayer.